Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, May 8th. I am Ingrid León, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Cal Poly Humboldt University Senate votes on dropping charges against students and staff. Round Valley Yuki woman competes for Miss Indian World. And headline Mendocino. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more. Coming right up. Cal Poly Humboldt University Senate voted on dropping charges against students and faculty as well as an independent investigation into the administration's actions involving April 22nd's protest. KMUD Ryan Christensen reports.
On Tuesday, May 7th, Cal Poly Humboldt held its University Senate meeting at the Arcata Community Center. Typically, the meetings are held at the Goodwin Forum on campus, but due to the Cal Poly Humboldt campus still being under a hard closure with a police presence at all entrance and exits, the meeting was moved to the Arcata Community Center. The Senate voted on numerous topics, including budget constraints and a new transition to campus accessibility for all individuals, but the main topic of the meeting was a resolution to drop all charges against student and faculty protesters, as well as a resolution for an investigation into the administration's decision-making related to April 22nd's protest actions and the aftermath that followed. Previously, on Monday, May 6th, 320 members of Cal Poly's faculty and staff issued a letter to the Chancellor of California State University's Mildred Garcia, Governor Newsom, and the California State University's Board of Trustees, calling for the resignation of President Tom Jackson and Chief of Staff Mark Johnson for their, quote, repeatedly extreme and reckless actions in response to recent campus protests. Before Tuesday's Senate meeting, the university released a press statement expressing its timeline of the events of April 22nd, when students entered Siemens Hall. It stated that vandalism to the interior of the building had started before the police arrived, and the protesters had refused police requests to leave the building and had already begun barricading the entrance and exits. Protest organizers, on the other hand, have stated that they wanted to execute a, quote, soft occupation of the building. They intended to allow classes and core administrative functions to continue while they held the space, a tactic commonly referred to as a sit-in. President Tom Jackson was absent from the meeting, which of course he is a member, but his chief of staff, Mark Johnson, was in attendance. When asked by a member of the community why Jackson wasn't in attendance, Johnson said it was due to, quote, legitimate concerns about his personal safety, end quote. This seemed to bring a laugh from the standing room only crowd in attendance. Johnson rarely spoke throughout the 3+ hour meeting. He mostly stared straight ahead and did not engage with the numerous public commenters. He did speak briefly at the beginning of the meeting, expressing that there had to be, quote, a reckoning, end quote, on campus for decisions made by everyone involved in the protests and their aftermath. When it came time to vote on the resolutions, the Senate almost unanimously voted in favor of dropping the charges against both student and faculty protesters, as well as an independent investigation into the university's decision-making related to the April 22nd protest actions. The meeting then opened to public comment. Students, faculty, staff, and Arcata community members addressed the Senate and, more pointedly, Chief of Staff Mark Johnson, such as Kelly Fortner, Cal Poly Humboldt Student Support Coordinator.
While I'm not surprised by the decision of our university leadership to send police and riot gear to campus in an attempt to quiet the voices of students who organized a peaceful sit-in and open occupation across multiple faiths and identities on Monday, April 22nd, I am deeply disappointed and heartbroken by the actions of our university leadership. The decision to send in riot squads on both Monday, April 22nd and Monday, April 29th, 2024, was a statement of violence toward our students. There have been multiple occasions of students occupying buildings on our campus over the years, and not once have our students been met with police force or faced criminal charges. Our students are not criminals. They are part of a and a vision of a future that is not built on imperialism, land theft, genocide, and oppression. They call for collective liberation, and in response, it is our duty to stand in solidarity with students and call for a collective liberation as well. We must move forward towards a model of shared governance that genuinely takes the perspectives of our campus community, tribal nations, and the local community that this university is a part of into account. How can university leadership begin this work? First, all sanctions against our students must be dropped immediately. Second, the campus must be reopened immediately and the police presence must be told to leave. Third, we need transparency, accountability, and open communication from leadership from this moment forward. And fourth, the leadership of this university must set an example and call for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza.
Michio Sagata, faculty in sociology, read a statement by Dr. Wahala Augusta, who was arrested and suspended by the university for taking part in the protest.
Dear Chair and members of the Cal Poly Humboldt Senate, campus, and community members, in light of recent events on our campus, it is imperative to acknowledge the remarkable efforts of our students in raising awareness about pressing global issues. Their dedication to activism and advocacy serves as a beacon of inspiration, reminding us all of the power we hold as agents of change within our community. It is through unwavering support from members of faculty, staff, community, and administrators that our campus remains a vibrant hub of intellectual discourse and social progress. However, amidst our expressions of gratitude, it is crucial to address a troubling issue that has come to light regarding the disciplinary actions towards students and faculty. We cannot turn a blind eye to the unjust charges and suspensions leveled against both students and faculty. It is disheartening to witness the erosion of academic freedom and the suppression of dissenting voices within our university. Therefore, we call upon Vice President of Enrollment Management and Student Success, Dr. Chrissy Holliday, Dean of Students, Dr. Mitch Mitchell, and Associate Vice President of Faculty Affairs, Dr. Kim White, to drop all and any charges and suspensions for students and faculty without hesitation. We urge them to demonstrate courage and integrity by disobeying any directives from President Jackson, whose leadership has been marred by an overwhelming vote of no confidence. While President Jackson's tenure may be finite, the lasting impact of our actions reverberate far beyond his departure. Do we want to be remembered as complicit bystanders or as principled individuals who stood up for justice and academic freedom? Sincerely, Dr. Rohala Agaste.
The Senate Community Center was filled with so many commenters, the meeting ran over by a good 30 to 40 minutes. As Mark Johnson left the building, students in attendance chanted, "Mark Johnson, please step down." This is Ryan Christensen for KMUD News.
Turning to Mendocino, Raquel Britton, Yuki from Rand Valley, prepares to travel to Albuquerque, New Mexico, to compete for the title of Miss Indian World. Britton describes life on the Round Valley Indian Reservation, as well her motivations for participating in Miss Indian World. Jen Prokashi reports.
Founded in 1983, Miss Indian World is a five-day competition held in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This year's competition takes place April 25th through 27th. The event is part of the annual Gathering of Nations, the largest Native American powwow in the world. Young women from across North America represent their tribes and communities as they compete to win the crown. Rather than emphasizing contestants' outward appearance, Miss Indian World aims to select a winner who demonstrates a deep understanding of her culture, traditions, people, and history. I spoke with Yuki tribal member and Round Valley resident Raquel Britton about her run for Miss Indian World.
I am Raquel Britton. I'm 22 years old. I come from the Round Valley Indian Tribes Reservation. That I am running for Miss Indian World, that I am registered under as Yuki, which would be considered Yuyokonom, which is people of the valley, which is where I'm from. I want to make a change. I want to show there's other things outside of Covelo and the reservation for youth and for everyone. That I got inspired. I always wanted to run, but I got mostly inspired in high school, but I never had the time or the confidence to run until officially now.
Raquel, what kind of preparations are you making leading up to the Miss Indian World competition in Albuquerque?
So, to leading up to the Miss Indian World pageant, behind the scenes is quite intense. I had to go through a process of writing an essay, documenting myself, providing my identity, talking more about myself to the Miss Indian World about who you are, where you come from, what are your goals, if you're going to school or not. So leading up to the pageant, I'll be there on the 23rd at 5 to be there at Albuquerque, New Mexico to officially register. And then leading up to the pageant will be personal interviews, dinners, talking, going behind the stage and preparing for the actual show. That there also will be the talent show and then the dance competition.
And what will you be performing for the talent portion of the pageant?
The traditional talent show, I'll be performing on my history of basketry. I learned how to do baskets at around, I'm going to say middle school to high school, that I just started picking up naturally, that I do have family members who can make baskets also, that it just came natural to me and I've been making baskets ever since. Basketry tells a story. It tells a story about the person and their character. Well, it tells us about who they are and what they represent. Also, it goes into the background of their homelands or their ancestral.
What is the dance portion of the Miss Indian World pageant like, and what will you be performing for that?
They have everyone kind of do kind of like a same dance. It is like kind of a roundhouse dance or like a powwow, you would say. They kind of have a drum group, so either Southern or Northern, depending on which group, and then they put you in, split into two groups where you kind of like perform like how you are. So you can dance however you please, or you can like follow the beat.
And will you be wearing special regalia for the dance performance?
I'll be wearing special regalia. I am making some new top pieces for my regalia, and then I have my mother who's helping me make my outfit portion.
Miss Indian World takes place in Albuquerque, and it is part of Gathering of Nations, the largest Native American powwow in the world. Will this be your first time attending Gathering of the Nations? Do you have any friends or family who have gone before?
I have not attended Gathering of Nations. I always wanted to go before, but I never had the chance. Now that I'm going as a Miss Indian World contestant, I'm excited to attend the Gathering Nations that I'll be attending with my sister and then my chaperone, who was my former American history teacher, Lori Lewa Thompson. She works at the Mendocino College as the full-time ethics teacher.
You're so passionate about the competition. Tell me, what would you do if you won the title of Miss Indian World?
If I were to win Miss Indian World, would be an honor to represent Covelo, even if I don't win. But to win the pageant portion itself would be also a very big honor, because you're not only representing Covelo, but you're representing the whole Native country or Indigenous nations from all over. That, to me, running is inspired youth to help make a change, be more a positive outlet. That after, to be honest, after dealing with the loss of my little cousin, Ruby Sky, I fell into a dark place that I wasn't even going to be sure if I was going to like run or not, because when that all happened, I was thinking about it before then, before everything happened, when they were having to sign that process. I applied for a funding for youth. It was a COVID funding for the Indian Health, National Indian Health Organization, that was a scholarship for a trip to Alaska. Now, I ended up getting a scholarship, and I ended up talking to a lot of people who are also going through things that happened through COVID or through their own ways of personal life. And then after I came home, I started more like opening up and realizing and going back to school officially.
Raquel, you told me you were doing some fundraising efforts to help pay for your journey to Albuquerque. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Right now, I'm looking for sponsors to help me to get over Albuquerque, to at least help pay for my flight and to help pay for other expenses. I've been writing sponsorship letters, and I've been waiting for responses back. And if anyone wants to support me, I do have a GoFundMe going on.
In addition to all the work and dedication it takes to prepare for a competition of this magnitude, Raquel, you're also pursuing higher education through Mendocino College, and you also volunteer for several groups in Covelo. It's been a dream of yours to compete in the Miss Indian World pageant for quite some time. How are you feeling as the competition draws closer?
The pageant itself, I know a lot of people from all over will be watching. It's on national TV. It'll be on being live broadcasted. That even if I don't win, I'm happy to represent, to even serve. That this is not open opportunity for me, but opportunity for everyone of Covelo, for all the young girls who wish to train or to wish to try to compete, or even girls from all over California or even other small reservations or even other big reservations who don't know if they can do it. That I just want to be a positive light and a positive role model to inspire people, even aspiring like boys or men, to be better, to be a better role model in the community.
You speak so much about your desire to inspire others and to be a good role model. Who was a good role model and who inspired you growing up?
I have my mother who's a positive role model, but to be honest, in Covelo, when I was kind of growing up in high school, there wasn't really a lot of positive things going on. Covelo has its ups and downs. There's good and there's bad. That's every reservation, to be straight to the point. But I did have a few positive role models growing up that even though there was a lot of negativity around me, I still kept on the right path. That for one, the right path for me, and what I aspire people, what I aspire the youth to be, is don't drink, you don't do drugs, you don't do alcohol, you don't do anything, you keep a positive light. It's called, in Indian country, it's called walking the red road. That walking the red road means that you walk alone, that you don't follow the crowd. That walking the red road means that you'll probably end up walking it very lonely road. It's a very hard road to walk, especially growing up as like a teenager, because you want to fit in under peer pressure. So I've seen what drugs and alcohol can do to people.
Thank you, Raquel. We wish you the best of luck. This has been Jen Procacci reporting for KMUD.
KMUD's Matt LaFever delivers the latest news from Mendocino County, covering a range of stories in this report.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. Union workers at Mendocino Lake Community College are set to rally today, May 8th, demanding increased support for the community from the college's Board of Trustees. Custodians, admission staff, financial aid workers, and maintenance technicians will gather at 4 p.m. at 1000 Hensley Creek Road in Ukiah. Their goal? Addressing the significant challenges faced by Mendocino County residents. Recent surveys reveal alarming statistics. 22% of these workers have experienced homelessness, with 3% currently homeless despite being employed. Furthermore, 18% have turned to government assistance to cover housing costs. Veronica Leon, SEIU 1021 chapter president and college admission technician, emphasized the crucial role of education and community empowerment. She stated, quote, "Living in Mendocino County is getting harder. We want to educate local youth right here in their own community," unquote. Union members will demand fair negotiations with the college administration to confront these pressing issues. Union members will be wearing purple shirts with picket signs, chanting, and delivering impassioned speeches. And now to the Mendocino County coast. On the evening of May 3, 2024, Fort Bragg police officers on routine patrol in the 200 block of Cypress Street witnessed a vehicle speeding westbound. The driver abruptly turned into an alley on South Franklin Street, seemingly trying to evade law enforcement. The chase then weaved through city streets, with the vehicle eventually accelerating through a stop sign at Whipple and Chestnut Streets. What ensued was a 12-minute pursuit filled with multiple traffic violations, culminating at a dead-end road off Sherwood Road. The surprising twist? The driver was revealed to be a 13-year-old juvenile, accompanied by two other young passengers. All were detained, and the passengers were later released to their parents. The driver was arrested and transported to the Fort Bragg Police Department, where the booking process began. The juvenile was cited and then released to their guardian, cited for evading law enforcement. Fort Bragg Police Chief Neil Cervanka encourages anyone with additional information to reach out to Officer Baker at 707-961-2800, extension 226. And now an important update from the Ukiah Animal Shelter. Currently, the dog kennels are nearing full capacity. If you encounter a lost or stray dog without identification, such as a dog license tag, rabies tag, or name tag, please contact the shelter at 463-4427. Please consider holding the dog temporarily until space becomes available in the shelter's kennels. If you're able to bring the dog to the animal shelter located at 298 Plant Road in Ukiah, staff will scan for a microchip, take a photo, and share the dog's information on the shelter's Facebook page to assist in reuniting them with their owner. If transportation is not feasible, an animal protection officer can be dispatched to your location. They will scan for a microchip, photograph the dog, and share the details on the shelter's Facebook page. The animal shelter recognizes that these are challenging circumstances for pet owners, lost animals, and animal shelters alike. Any assistance from the community is deeply appreciated. And now for an exciting update on fire safety in Mendocino County. The Mendocino County Fire Safe Council has just announced this year's Micro Grant Award recipients. 17 fire departments and affiliated neighborhood fire safe councils have been chosen to lead critical fire safety initiatives in their communities. These micro grants, ranging from $4,500 to $10,000, will have a significant impact across the county, thanks to a substantial contribution from the PG&E Corporation Foundation, which nearly doubled the available funding to $50,000. Now for a closer look at some of the selected projects. The Albion Little River Fire Safe Council will organize residents into neighborhood groups to enhance wildfire preparedness. The Brook Trails Township Community Service District will acquire equipment for wildfire incidents, including a portable, collapsible water tank. The Covelo Fire Protection District will enhance its water tender capacity with a new water bladder and equipment. Projects like these are crucial for improving community safety and preparedness. For instance, the Fox Rock and Woodman Creek Fire Safe Council will work on fuel reduction projects to enhance emergency access and evacuation routes. These microgrants emphasized local collaboration, with most proposals incorporating in-kind contributions, such as volunteer hours and supplies. This amplifies the impact of these initiatives. This year's grant allocation of $130,622, significantly more than last year, will support a diverse range of projects aimed at bolstering fire resiliency and safety throughout Mendocino County. Now let's turn to a community-driven initiative to transform a historic school campus in Redwood Valley into a vibrant hub for recreation and education. On April 23, 2024, concerned citizens gathered at the Redwood Valley Grange with a bold vision to repurpose the Redwood Valley School campus into a much-needed community center. Spearheading this effort are retired teacher Mary Beth Kelly and community leader Dr. Marvin Trotter. The Redwood Valley School, built in 1922 on land donated by J.M. and Florence Woolley, holds a special place in the region's history. Over time, neglect and disrepair have befallen the campus, which once housed generations of students. Despite its prime 12.4-acre riverfront location, the grounds have become dilapidated, with garbage and graffiti marring its potential. Efforts to sell or repurpose the campus have hit roadblocks, including failed bidding processes and legal hurdles. Now, a new proposal emerges: leasing the property for a community-centered initiative under the umbrella of the Alex Rohrbrough Recreation Center. Dr. Trotter, instrumental in founding the Alex Rohrbrough Recreation Center in Ukiah, envisions revitalizing the Redwood Valley site with a sports field, renovated classrooms, community gardens, and more. Dr. Trotter's vision extends beyond recreation. He aims to address local challenges like affordable housing for teachers and nurses. By incorporating tiny homes on part of the campus, the project could play a role in retaining vital community workers. Local contractor Eastock Metton sees promise in this endeavor, drawing parallels to successful community projects elsewhere in the county. He emphasizes the feasibility of renovating older buildings, including addressing asbestos concerns, a common challenge in such endeavors. The community's next steps are clear: mobilize public support. Advocates urge attendance at the upcoming Ukiah Unified School Board meeting on May 9th and encourage letter-writing campaigns to the trustees. The goal? To demonstrate overwhelming community backing for the transformation of this campus into a vital community asset. Join the conversation at the next community meeting on May 7th at the Redwood Valley Grange as residents and supporters work together toward a shared vision for the future. And now back to the Mendocino County coast, where in Fort Bragg, a routine investigation led to a significant drug-related bust at a local motel. On May 2, 2024, Fort Bragg police officers responded to an anonymous tip regarding possible drug activity at a motel on South Main Street. Inside a room, officers discovered narcotics and paraphernalia in plain view, prompting further action. Among the individuals present, 34-year-old Daniel Sanchez was identified as having an active felony warrant and violating post-release community supervision. During a protective sweep, officers uncovered a substantial amount of methamphetamine, packaging materials, currency, and a police scanner tuned to law enforcement frequencies. Multiple arrests were made, including Sanchez, Stephanie Smith, Brittany Smith, Cole Parker, and Johan Espinoza, all facing charges related to drug possession and conspiracy. Stephanie Smith, initially providing a false identity, now faces additional charges for false impersonation. Bail enhancements have been set at $50,000 for each individual involved. And now to Hopland. Embrace the beauty of spring at the UC Hopland Research and Extension Center during Celebrate Science and Nature, an annual fundraiser happening on Sunday, May 19th. Immerse yourself in the lush landscape of the 5,358-acre center, alive with blooming wildflowers. Join scientists and staff for field tours highlighting the cutting-edge research projects from drone technology to oak woodland regeneration. Hannah Bird, the community educator at the Hopland Research and Extension Center, invites you to discover and support environmental education efforts while enjoying a farm-to-table luncheon with locally sourced ingredients. Hopland Research and Extension Center Director John Bailey says, quote, "Your participation helps fund educational programs, fostering discovery and understanding of our natural world," unquote. Tickets are available online at the Hopland Research and Extension Center website. Come celebrate science and nature on May 19th at Rod Shippey Hall in Hopland.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashling, and thanks to our reporters. Reporting for KMUD, a studio in Redway, I am Ingrid Leon.